You are listening to Grandpa Lampshade.
And welcome to installment number 95 of a non-melancholy show this week. I've promised some of you who contacted me this week's show is going to be more upbeat, and it is indeed because my mood is more upbeat. Just coming off holiday funk, fairly long drives and things such as that. It's just last week was just one of those weeks, but I think it was still a passable show. The show seems a little too melancholy. Maybe I ought to re-record it. And I thought, even if I did, it would still, my mood is the same. It's going to be reflected. But this week's show, we got a lot of great stuff. We're going to talk about it because I've got my mojo back on. Feel as though I'm, officially and comfortably back in the groove this week. And I've actually, believe it or not, it's one of those rare times when I actually have a few ideas jotted down that I think are going to be a lot of fun to talk about this week. If you're new stopping by here, I do appreciate you giving the show a chance. I think it'll be, you're going to find that it's something different. It's probably nothing at all like what you expect. We're still moving ahead, or I'm still moving ahead, trying to work out some new name for the show. Again, I appreciate those of you who have thrown out some suggestions. I do appreciate it. And just kind of bear in mind that the whole idea with this, once again, is that we do have people coming on the Radio Albany Network. They scan through, and we have these shows like the Orthodox Nationalist, Daily Nationalist, Greatest Britain's, Truth Without Radio, and the names convey what the show is about. And what it basically comes down to is the Church of the Lampshade. What is that about? So, it's kind of when it comes down to it, I guess what I want to say is, my idea with the calling the show something else is the notion of, I want it to convey what we do here. And I haven't settled on anything yet. I personally had come up with something like Ministry of Truth, but that's kind of been done to death. It's pointed out to me that's kind of cliched at this point, and I think that may be right. As I pointed out last week, one of my favorite listener-suggested ones is the Church of the Nationalist. That's a pretty good one. But hey, drop me an email if you really think you've got something that conveys what the show is about. And I take it in consider. Like I said, when I first brought this up, I'm not going democracy here. It's ultimately will be my decision. So if it winds up sucking, it won't be your fault. It'll all be on me. I'm not passing the blame anywhere. Getting right off the bat, we do like to get into recognizing and going through the reader, listener, supporter mailbag, as it were. And we do really appreciate, I do really appreciate those of you who aren't shy and pay your tithes. That information is at the bottom of the page. We've got snail mail. We've got Bitcoin. If you've got a weirdo cryptocurrency, give me an email. More than likely, I can get you an address for that. And if you sent something, because I know, for instance, I was having an email back and forth with one of the monthly supporters, and his hasn't showed up yet. I know for a fact that the diversity post office will sit there and stack mail when they're busy. And then when they get caught up, usually on a Saturday, then they grab it all up and start shoving it into P.O. boxes. So if you've sent something in the snail mail and hadn't showed up yet, don't freak out, because more than likely it will. We had the holiday thing here just recently. And then, of course, they get busier after, leading up to Christmas, and they may still be overwhelmed from the mail-in voting fraud. So, we got to cut them a break. But we do have 5 supporters this week, including our 3 Bitcoin Anons, which, again, I do appreciate it. So we're going to get, without further ado, because we do have a lot of stuff we're going to discuss and talk about this week. So without further ado, let us get into the listener supporter mailbag from one of our weekly supporters, Mr. TGPL. Keep on, regardless of what you call the show. Hope the tithe helps. Wish more would pay those tithes. And we will. We're going to keep on. I mean, nothing's going to change about the show. In fact, as far as, the only social media I'm left with is unfortunately, Gab. And, you know, it's going to stay Grandpa Lampshade on Gab for the time being, for the foreseeable future, I should say. So, you know, again, it's just about conveying the idea where somebody that comes on and is scrolling through, okay, what kind of content's on this network? And, you know, they see the name of this show and it actually conveys what we do here so that maybe they might give it a shot, because I do believe if you listen once, you'll want to listen again. Let's keep it rocking. Dear Mr. Lampshade, I hope my letter and humble donation finds you well. I'm a big fan of the show on Radio Albion. You are one of the last truthful voices in the dissident right. I don't know why so many of those in the dissident community are unwilling to call out the pandemic hoax for what it really is. I have personally dubbed it the FOVID-19. The coronavirus thing is, in my opinion, the biggest lie in human history, and quite possibly the greatest atrocity in human history. Many right-wingers are going along with this hoax and parroting the system's talking points on this matter. All these people are useless at best and likely very harmful to our cause. May God bless you for telling the truth on this matter and sticking to your guns. The pandemic lie is the biggest issue we face. It is what the system has in store for our people. As a result of it, is revelation level hell on earth stuff. Elimination of private property, extreme surveillance, going cashless, great reset, etc. Thank you for pushing on this issue and recognizing its importance. I love your show, and I will continue to tune in as long as I can find it. May God bless, and thank you for all that you do for our people and our cause. Sincerely, Hank. And it is appreciated. And I was having a discussion about this email back and forth with another listener. And something I don't think I've necessarily pointed out, which I'll take the opportunity to point out here, is, you know, you've got folks focusing on this blatant election fraud that they did this time around. And then, of course, you also have the doom flu narrative going on, and the thing about all of these things are happening, and it gets difficult to do because there is so much happening at one time, is to not look at these things in a vacuum. For instance, if you say, well, you know, this election hoax where they just blatantly manufactured ballots to the point that it's laughable. I mean, you have Biden that can't get, you know, 6 people, 20 people at most to show up to listen to anything he's going to babble about. You know, that somehow now he's the most popular person that's ever run for president in the history of the nation. It's absurd on his face. Or you have the doom flu narrative, which is, we know by their own numbers, if you dig through the statistics, what they're claiming, this crisis that they're claiming that it is a lie. But you can't look at them, you know, in a vacuum, because they all are interrelated. It is all part of a bigger overall plan. What we're seeing right now is this push, that this idea, they've gone all in on the notion that the media is going to be able to just simply create a reality and the people will accept it. And the doom flu narrative is every bit as much related to and connected to, say, the election hoax narrative in this regard. You get people conditioned to go along with everything with the doom flu thing, and you know, they're ready for the election fraud hoax. And you're right, because they are going to actually push a whole lot more. They're not, I mean, I don't know how many times we have to have seen this idea that they're never going to stop. You know, you look at the cancel culture, as they call it, the woke crowd or whatever, you know, what they're outraged about on a daily basis. And it never stops. They always have a next thing that they're outraged about. It doesn't matter how absurd it is or how far out there they have to, you know, get to find it. I do believe that this vaccine, now we're up to the vaccine. They're pushing so hard for this vaccine. So a news story this past week where it said former presidents Bush, Obama, and Clinton are planning to take the vaccine on television to reassure the public that it's absolutely safe. That, you know, like, because the public is too stupid to think, hey, maybe that's just a saline shot. You know, maybe it's not actually the vaccine. But I was thinking about that, and it's like, well, wow, they sure are determined to get as many people to take this vaccine as possible, aren't they? I mean, doesn't it strike anybody as strange how determined they are? You know, I guess you would have to, I guess there's people out there who think that the government is really worried about their health, safety, and well-being. These are probably the same people that think they put fluoride in the water because they're worried about your teeth. It's nonsensical. These people will, you know, they're responsible for killing who knows how many people around the world when it suits them. And they would kill people in this country, and I'm sure do, when that notion suits them. If it furthers their power or their agenda, they got no problem. You know, who dies? But now we're supposed to believe that, oh, they're just so worried. They're so worried about our health and safety. I find it very concerning how hard they're pushing for this vaccine. That in and of itself, I think, is a clue. You know, people get out there and say, well, the vaccine's going to do this, the vaccine's going to do that. But you don't know. I mean, we don't know exactly what it's going to do. We do know they had to give blanket immunity to the big pharmaceutical companies so that they can't be sued when it does do things that people aren't real keen on, less than stellar side effects. But we're supposed to, the same government that told us for years that Agent Orange was not the reason all the Vietnam vets were getting, you know, cancer and dying, is the same government that says you have absolutely nothing to worry about because Pfizer and other big pharmaceutical companies have come up with this mystery shot that you're going to have to take. And they are going to force you to take it. They're going to try their best, I'll put it that way, to force you to take it. They're going and they've laid out the groundwork. You know, it's not hard to figure it out. You're not going to be able to do X amount of things unless you have proof of your vaccination. And I believe at some point it will go as far as you're not going to be able to renew your driver's license without proof of the vaccine. I really do. They'll say driving is a privilege. Remember, after 9/11, they came up with being able to search you at the airport without probable cause, threw that out the window. It's completely unconstitutional, and they justified it by saying, well, flying is a privilege, and you don't have to fly. If you want to stick to your principles, then you can just not fly. There you go. No matter how much it may inconvenience you, no matter how much your like livelihood maybe depends on, you know, business trips and things such as that. So you have to surrender, because suddenly being able to fly is a privilege. It's not a right. So this is how we get around it. They'll say the same thing about driving. They'll say driving is a privilege. In fact, they already say that driving is a privilege. That's why you have to be licensed for it. And you just simply won't be able to renew. So you just take the bus. Just walk, ride a bicycle, but better for the planet anyway. If you really believe that it's in your rights to not take the vaccine, then you can just simply not drive. They will try to make it so inconvenient for you to where essentially you have to. And again, this is related. You look at the mask thing that they have pushed. They take the mask thing was like one of the early steps, and they have just promoted. Got to wear the mask. I don't have a problem with people that are like, you know, if you're, say, elderly or you have health problems and you're taking every measure, like wearing a mask to protect yourself. Look, I'm not talking about you. When I make fun of people wearing the masks and stuff, I'm not talking about you. If you got underlying health problems or you're old or you're in the risk group, take all the precautions you can. I'm not making fun of you for that. Or I'm not ridiculing any of you for doing that. If you are one, you know, if you, like I say, if you fall in that risk category. But when you see these perfectly healthy people that are not elderly and they're driving around in their own cars wearing gloves, a face mask, and a face shield, like they're fixing to go grab a die grinder or something and they don't want to get sparks in their eyes, and they're driving around alone like that. I mean, these people, you got to make fun of them because it's so stupid. And people that will do that will go along with blatant election fraud. You see, this is all, you can't look at these things by themselves. They all are interrelated. It's all connected. You know, I mean, one thing conditions you for the next thing, which conditions you for the next thing, which conditions you for the next thing. And it's step by step. And they do, it's hell on earth stuff that they've got coming because they're never going to stop. I mean, they're never going to stop demanding more and more power. Anyway, let's keep rocking. We got one final one to go through here. We've got a lot of stuff to cram into the show. That's why we never seem to hardly make it within the allotted hour time. We always run just a hair, just a just a smidgen long here. Grandpa, I was a big follower of your back in the Twitter days of 16. It's been great to reconnect with your humor and knowledge. I grew up Southern Baptist, but I believe I've learned more listening to your church over the last month of your podcast than I did in 20 years of SB cuckery. It has really strengthened my faith and knowledge of the Word of God. I lost my business during lockdown, so I can't really send much right now. Going from working for myself to a part-time job at a grocery store has really impacted my finances. I am grateful to even have that when so many more don't have anything. Unfortunately, I don't see any improvement on the horizon, but I have faith that God knows what challenges we all really need. Anyway, feel that it's important to do my little bit to keep the show going, listening to your Thanksgiving show, and I have an idea for the name. This might be a little too religious, but something along the lines of the National Congregation with the Reverend Lampshade. Then you can slowly drop the lampshade as the podcast grows. Personally, the lampshade was great for Twitter, but I think you're going to impact more people in the next months. It's a little cliche, but I'm reminded of 1 Corinthians 13:11. It's time to go dignified because there are great things ahead of you. This whole we don't need to worry about optics is stupid. We need a bigger reach, and that means appealing to the largest audience without sacrificing your core beliefs. God bless, Bob. And you know, a lot of times I do edit the what people write in, and it's not an insult to the people that are writing in. I'm not doing that because, you know, there's something about it I don't like, but I do it to get, you know, points across. And I was sitting down doing this one. I was going to edit around on it, and I decided to read the whole thing because it does touch on a few things. Again, what we are doing with the renaming of shows, we're not changing the content of the show. The idea, as I said at the beginning, is we really want to convey where people will give it a listen. I'm really convinced that if people give it a listen, but they have to know, get an idea that the name of the show needs to convey what the show is about so that they know, hey, maybe I want to give this a listen to, because there are like 6 million podcasts out there. I'm pretty sure that like something like Grandpa Dan will be what I'll use moving forward as renaming, you know, rebranding the show. But we're not changing anything in the content. And I have had a couple of people be like, you know, man, it's like you're too watering down. And that's not the intention at all. The thing is, yeah, I mean, back in the Twitter days, you know, back when we were, you know, doing something completely different, a lot of us were doing things completely different, you know, posting funny trolls and things and triggering these people, for their over the top reaction. I was thinking this morning, we never dreamed that their over the top reaction would be to basically go ahead and blow up the entire system. the economy, and just go all in on complete hoaxery and grasp, you know, taking full, just absolute totalitarian control. We never did intend for it to go that over the top, but alas, here we are. And you know, you want to always be, how do I want to say it? You always want to be adjusting your tactics. You don't, you know, when you find something that works, the enemy is going to adjust to that, and then it becomes less effective. So you too have to be able to adapt and adjust, shift things around. What works better now than this? Because they've come up with a defense for that, and so now you have to constantly be doing that. That is just, you know, it's just effective strategy 101. I mean, you know, and some people get locked into, well, we just need to keep doing the same thing we were doing 6-7 years ago or whatever, and it's not, because times have changed, and like I say, they've come up with a defense for that now. And I mean, just look at social media, for instance. I'm on Gab. That's all I can be on. I took a peek in normie Twitter, by the way, the other day, and it's worse than I thought. It is, you know, now that all the fun people have been banned, it's absolutely worse than I thought. You've got the commies there. Of course, they're always comfy no matter what they say. They don't get banned. And the big thing they were outraged at the moment I looked at it is about the anime Attack on Titan, because somehow now the Titans represent the Jews and it's anti-Semitic. And the people fighting against the Titans are fascists, and it's an anime. I mean, it is literally an anime about people that morph into giant Titans, and there's like this big fight for survival. And there's intrigue, and it's so utterly stupid, though, because, again, as I said earlier, they're always going to find something to be outraged about, no matter how absurd it is. And here we are, we have a Twitter outrage over an anime, because somehow the giant titans that attack and eat people are the Jews. You know, I mean, you want to talk about, I don't know, and is that a canard now? I mean, I don't even know how you stretch it that far. And then over here, you have some Normicons, apparently, that are still left on Twitter. Because they banned a lot of Normie Trump supporters off of Twitter, and I didn't know there were any. But it's curious, the ones that are still on Twitter, virtually to a person, are promoting this whole election fraud thing is the work of the Chinese. It's curious, the ones, the Normicons that are still allowed on there, they're the ones that are promoting the idea the election hoax is the work of these demon rats and them commie chinks. It's foreign influence, all right. And we know who it is because we're enlightened. It's the Chinese. Every politician goes and bows before APEC. This is a fact. Every politician, regardless of party, promises that Israel will get their billions of dollars every year. There's no politician, none, that are going to say, yeah, no, we're done giving free money to Israel. They all bow before the AIPAC lobby. The AIPAC lobby half the time writes the bills and just gives them to the Congress people who don't read them. They just sign them off and present them to Congress. We know this is a fact, but yet you have Normicons on Twitter going on about how woke they are in Normicon land because they know it's them evil chinks. It's them evil chinks that are foreign influencing and meddling in the elections. It's bad. It's really bad. But the thing is, getting back on point here is, now, you can't do trolling and triggering on Twitter anymore because you can't be on Twitter or Facebook. We're stuck in, like me, I'm stuck in the social media internment camp that is Gab. And virtually everybody else there already pretty much is aware of these things. So who are you going to troll? You're going to troll people that already, you know, at least 75% agree with you on stuff? What's the point of that? There really isn't any. So you do have to be able to adjust your tactics and things such as that. That gets wrapped up through the listener supporter mailbag. Oh, and one final point, you know, I do appreciate those who financially support the show. And no, I don't expect y'all to break the bank. I mean, just a simple fact is if everybody listened to the show sent a whopping $5 a month, I would have a very comfortable middle class lifestyle. I mean, I know that's not going to happen. And those that do send on average more than that, and it's very much appreciated. But if everybody that listened to the show sent what amounts to the cost of a medium soda water a week, I could actually have a comfortable medium middle class lifestyle, which it's kind of a cool fantasy. But as it is, like, I think it's something like 0.75% of the listenership does that, actually financially supports the show. So, yeah, I don't expect y'all to, like, break the bank to support the show. So, anyway, any little bit, it helps. It is appreciated. Getting off into the overall topic and theme of this show. And I'm looking at the clock. We've already 20 minutes in. I haven't even got into this great overarching theme that I had in mind, because like I say, I do the show by the seat of my pants. I generally just kind of make stuff up as I go. Well, I don't make it up. I make up topic. I decide, I guess this would be a better way to put it. I choose the topics on the fly here, but this week I have had things come to my mind and I went ahead and jotted them down because I thought this would be great to talk about on the show, especially considering last week's show was quite honestly not the most upbeat ever. Not the most upbeat ever. As you pursue truth, you have to look at, you know, like I said, the big picture of what your enemies are doing, with the enemies to the people, to the nation, you know, what it is they're doing, what it is they're accomplishing, you know, and how they're going about accomplishing that. And that includes looking back at things they've done. One of the things they've done, it's just remarkable. I mean, it's horribly destructive, but it is a remarkable thing. And this kind of comes back to why we have a Christian specific overall show, but specific message that we do later on in the show. And that is that they have invented this new morality. They have. They've invented a new morality. And it's amazing because people will do things in the name of this new morality that are absolutely self-destructive. Not talking about obvious things like abortion or I don't know, doing drugs or something. I'm talking about things that negatively impact themselves. And I thought a great example of this is immigration. Just recently, Go Team R, the Senate Republicans have been working studiously on a bill to grant relief to workers that are, come on hard times. No, you may think that might would mean American workers, but it does not. Know something like 800,000 Indians have been waiting to be able to come to the U.S. and take your IT jobs with their green cards, and they haven't been able to do that, and it's just not fair to those Indian workers. So the Senate Republicans are working to get that corrected so that 800,000 Indians. Now, we're in a time when, in the name of the doom flu, they have destroyed the economy, put countless millions out of work, destroyed small businesses, and what's their reaction? They're going to flood even more people into the labor market to keep wages down. Add competition for jobs that are still, that are already scarce. We have readers, we have listeners who, writing in right here, that had their own business and now they're working part-time at a grocery store, a job that high school kids used to do. That's where we're at. I go, you know, you stop at Sonic to get you a drink, and you know there's somebody my age out there car hopping, and everybody's just fine with it. Well, they've, why? Because they've created a morality. In the new morality, immigration is good. You have to be welcoming. And yes, the modern cuck church has played an active role in this. Under the new morality, you have to welcome the entire world into your country. Otherwise, according to the new morality, you hate them. So if you oppose the idea of, in this instance, 800,000 Indians coming to your country to compete for what few jobs may be out there, that means you hate Indians and you've got something against them and don't want them to have a better life, because after all, they can't make as much money in India. Under this new morality, you're guilty of some sort of sin if you are against immigration. And so what happens is, in the name of this new morality, even you might call it a part of a new religion, in the name of this new morality, the people will stand up and not only not oppose, but will actually applaud and encourage more immigrants. We need more people to come here because of the diversity, because the new morality says more diversity, which means fewer white people, which means more people from around the world, more immigrants, is good. The new morality dictates this. It's part of the Ten Commandments of the new morality. You have to welcome the entire world, more diversity, more immigration. And this benefits who? It benefits billionaires. It benefits the big corporations. So you have people to their own detriment, to their own standard of living. Because if the big corporations just blatantly came out and said, we refuse to hire Americans, we demand to be able to import immigrants to replace everybody for their jobs at lower wages, well, the people might push back against that if there wasn't imposed, if you didn't have the backdrop of this new morality. But people will not push back on it. They said, well, the people demand it. They said, we're going to import these people because we need more diversity. We need more You know, it's going to make your wages lower if you're lucky enough to even get a job, which you probably won't be. But it's the people themselves. That's the thing. The people themselves are promoting something that is to the benefit of the big corporations. It's what the big corporations want. But they don't even have to get their hands dirty because they have the cover of the new morality where the people themselves actually promote their own lowered standard of living. The people themselves, the workers themselves, promote importing more competition for their jobs so their wages stay low or they can't get a job at all. And the corporations, their hands appear to be clean. This is even more interesting when you consider that, you know, the what passes for the quote-unquote left anymore, though I do believe the terms left and right are really obsolete now, but sometimes I still have to use them just to make a point. What passes now for the left, you know, has claimed for years to be against the big corporations, and yet they are the greatest proponents now of the new morality. The trick of the new morality is to get the people to demand things to their own detriment and to the benefit of, say, in this instance, the big corporations. The big corporations don't even have to be the bad guy here. People demand it. You're not against diversity, are you? Anybody who does speak out against this is what? Immediately labeled a heretic, a hater. You hate diversity. You hate those people for the color of their skin. You want Indians to have a lower standard of living, which is stupid. I got nothing against Indians. I got nothing against anybody anywhere. I don't have anything against Africans, Mexicans, anybody else. I don't care. They have their own countries, and I wish them the best. But why would you promote bringing them here to lower your own standard of living? That doesn't make you holy. It doesn't make you more righteous. And like I said earlier, the modern cult church has played an instrumental role. It's easy to see why the subversion of the church has been such a key element of this. You have the church going around saying, yes, we have to welcome the poor. We have poor people here. Don't worry. If part of your Christian duty is ministering to the poor, you're not going to run out of poor people already here in this country. You're not going to have to import them. Do they even do missionary work anymore? Why would they? I remember back when I was a kid, you know, you'd be sitting in the church and they'd be like, we're welcoming back Bob and his wife who have been to Africa on missionary work for the past 6 months. And they always look like they had a bad case of some kind of disease or something. They always lose weight. But now I don't know why they have to do that. It's like they can be missionaries and sit on their fat ass at home and just wait to import them. They just import them here and do their missionary work right next door. They imported them into the community. The church has played a role in this because they've taken this welcome the poor to mean you've got to welcome everybody else in the world, in the country, to the detriment of their own people, to the detriment of their own parishioners. What is Christian about essentially attacking your own flock in order to bring in other people from, you know, foreign people from around the world? And even pointing this out as we are here is heresy under the new morality. You're a hater. You're saying you hate those people. What have we pointed out here that even remotely sounds like hate? We're pointing out this all benefits the big corporations, the banks, the oligarchy. The things that the left used to claim to be against, by the way. But they throw that out the window because the new morality says this makes you a more moral, a better person. This new morality has also been used when it comes to the role of women in society. Women in the workforce back when they first started pushing this, it was just simply nothing more than to keep wages suppressed. If you have only men in the workforce and now all of a sudden you get women in the workforce, guess what? More competition. It's the same thing with bringing in the immigrants. You support equality, don't you? You're not a misogynist. You're not an evil sexist, are you? You hate women if you don't want women in the workforce competing for your jobs and lowering your standard of living. Never mind, it's completely self-destructive for women. Just imagine women could stay here, manage the home, which was a full-time job, by the way, manage the home, raise the children, take care of things in the household so that the husband didn't have to work all damn day and then come home and take care of those things. A woman was there to manage the household. It was a full-time job. But that didn't count. Your value as a woman is not in making sure that the society... This is always mind-blowing to me. They have redefined under this new morality a woman's value, her worth. You only have value as a woman if somehow you're doing some cubicle job, shuffling papers or entering crap on a computer. That is your value. And people, because it is a new morality, they don't understand how really insulting and cheapening, not even a word, how much it cheapens a woman's role in society. It sounds, because when people say things like women's only role is making babies, it does, that comes across as insulting, and there's no reason to sound insulting. Because it sounds like you're just a womb factory. And it kind of plays into the narrative of the new morality. The way I prefer to present it is women's primary role is to ensure there's future. The future belongs to those who show up for it, and that means those who come after you, because we're all going to die. I mean, our time here is very limited. The older you get, the more you recognize this. Your time here is very, very limited. So who's going to show up for the future? Are you going to show up for the future? Well, you will, in the sense that, you know, your descendants, may it your children or grandchildren, show up for the future. I mean, you personally can't, because at some point you're going to die. You're not going to be here. You won't get to see what great things happen, or you won't have to suffer through what, you know, turmoil comes about. Usually there's a mixture of both. But women's role is to ensure the society exists at all. Sounds pretty important to me, but not according to the new morality. The new morality says, ensuring that there's a future at all, a society at all, that's nothing. What matters is that, you know, you go work in a box somewhere doing things that nobody even cares about and nobody will remember next year, much less a generation from now. But the new morality says this is your value. Under the natural order, you know, the hierarchy goes something like God at the top, then man, then woman, then children. When you oppose the new morality as it's applied to women, you're accused of hating women. Do you hate your children? Well, no, I don't know. I guess there's twisted assholes out there who actually do hate their own children, but normal people don't. Normal people don't go around hating their children. If you have children, I'm sure you, maybe you have little ones, maybe you have little children, and you probably love your children. You would do anything for your children, wouldn't you? If it came down to it, you would die for your children. That is the normal attitude that a parent has. But you wouldn't leave your children just to run the household, would you? I mean, you wouldn't just abandon your duties as a parent and let the kids run the household. Let the kids decide how the household is going to be run. Of course not. It's absurd. It's not that you hate your children. It's just that's not their role. It's not their responsibility. Yet you back that. I shouldn't use the term hierarchy, but you back that order, that natural order, up a step and apply it to women, and voila, the entire society goes along with the notion. And again, just like the way they use immigration with this new morality, I mean, it's clever. I mean, you've got to hand them that. It's clever. I mean, you know, the most direct manner that they could stop of society or a people from moving forward, eliminating them, would be to wipe out all their women. Not the men, by the way, because men are almost irrelevant in that matter. You could wipe out almost all of the men, but if there's a few left, then the society can move forward. But if you wipe out all of the women, you're done. You're done because they're limited on how many children they can have. And if they could, they would go outright. These same people that promote this morality of how they somehow are, this feminism, this promotion, we just want what's best for women. If they could, they would kill all the women. That would be the direct, but they can't do that. They can't do that directly, so they go this route. Sadly, a lot of women realize this. They come to realize the game that's been played on, but sadly, all too often, it is too late. It's too late. You know, you're 45, 50 years old as a woman, and you realize that you've bought into a lie your entire life, and you've missed the opportunities. Then you can't wind the clock back, and they don't care. I was thinking about societies, functioning societies, the natural order. It all depends on all of these things fulfilling the roles, all of these different parts working. You know, we enjoy like a civilized society, a high trust society. It'd be nice if we had that. We pretty much lost it now. But all of those things are actually very delicate, and you have to have all of these parts moving forward and doing their roles. So to destroy that society, all one has to do is just to attack certain parts of it, and the whole thing comes apart. Women provide the future. They actually provide the opportunity for a nation, for a society, for a people to move forward. One very much could argue, and I would even make the argument, it's the most important role anybody could play. So you have a situation where women actually play the most important role in the overall well-being of the people, of the nation, of the society as a whole. And that's been downplayed under the new morality. So they simply cause these roles to break down. Yeah, you see it in the way people interact and such, and you see different ways in which the roles break down. Like for instance, you'll see a man and he loves his wife, and on the surface it might seem like everything should be good there, but yet the roles wind up breaking down. You wind up having this discontent, this discord in a household. And a lot of times I think what will happen, you'll see a man and he will get up this attitude of, I will do anything to make her happy. I mean, you want to make your children happy, right? You know, just, and again, on the surface, this sounds like, oh, well, that's a good thing, right? He loves his wife so much, he'll do anything to make her happy. Well, if you love your children, you do anything to make them happy. But, well, your children say they'll be happy if they just eat candy for meals and just don't ever learn anything, don't ever experience anything new, don't ever try anything new, don't ever do anything challenging. They just want to have fun and eat candy all day. But you don't let them do that, do you? When a man adopts this attitude of, I will do anything to make her happy, and he winds up forfeiting his role as the head of the household. I'll do anything. What do you want, baby? I'll do anything you want, baby. And so often, you know, the women will wind up, they wind up perplexed because they find the more they attempt to quote unquote make her happy, which seems to translate into the minds of so many men subjugating themselves to her very whim. I'll do anything. I'll do anything to make you happy. Just tell me what you want. I'll do anything. I will take out more debt than I can possibly ever pay back. I'll humiliate myself. I will do whatever to make you happy. And yet, time and again, you see these men perplexed at the outcome because the more they attempt to do anything to make her happy, the more she resents him. And they don't understand it. Why does she resent me? You see, other guys, I don't know why she resents it. She acts uglier and uglier towards him. Because, that guy does anything to make that woman happy. And here she is. She doesn't appreciate it. Well, you're right. She doesn't appreciate it. She doesn't appreciate it because you're forfeiting your role as the head of the household. There's nothing wrong with wanting to make your wife happy. But when you get this subservient, I will do anything to make you happy attitude, you're going to find that the result is that she resents you more and more. And she should, because you're just... you know, you're chickening out on your role as the head of the household. Again, the natural order of authority, as it were, is God, man, woman, children. If you walked into your living room and your children were cussing out their mother and telling her where to go because they were going to do whatever they want to, you're not going to react to that very well, I would think. Well, why? Because it's a violation of the hierarchy. I hate to use the term hierarchy. It's a violation of the natural order of authority. Somebody's got to be in charge. Your wife, the woman, is in charge of the children. She has authority over the children. You walk in and your kids are telling her where to go and she isn't going to tell them what to do and blah, 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 blah. You're going to, is your role as a, yet another step higher in the authority to snap that shit back in line. You're not going to put up with that because it's a violation of the authority. And yet men surrender their role of authority in the name of the new morality. I'll do anything to make her happy. I will just cow down. I'll just bow down. I'll just grovel before her like she's my overlord. They abandoned their own role. Why should she respect you? You won't even take up your own role in the natural order of authority. We point these things out. This is the way societies, healthy societies, have functioned and moved forward. Couples were happy. The people were happy. Societies moved forward. Peoples moved forward under the natural order since man started walking the face of this earth. And now under the new morality, this means you hate women. This means that you just want to go home and beat the shit out of your wife every day so she knows you're in charge. Let me tell you what, if you have to do that, if you have to go home and beat the shit out of your wife every day so that she knows you're in charge, then you have very weak authority. Quite honestly, if you have to raise your voice to get somebody, to get your wife or your kids to know that you're in charge, then you're not doing it right. Don't get me wrong, sometimes you do have to raise your voice, but you shouldn't have to, because it means that they're already, your authority is already being challenged. But this is the false illustration, it's the lie presented when you point these things out, they try to paint this picture of, oh, you just support men going home and knocking their old ladies around. They shouldn't have to do that. Everybody in the household will be happy if the natural order of authority. And remember, the man is at the top of that list. God himself is at the top of that list of the hierarchy, of the authority chain of command, if you would. And the man ultimately has to answer to God himself. A man who is simply cruel to his family for the sake of it because he is a wicked and evil man will answer for that, both in this life and the life to come. As we move forward with this, I find that we're just going to kind of morph right on into the Christian-specific segment. Usually I stop and say, well, we're wrapping up. We're going to get into the Christian-specific segment. But I really want to continue on this topic of the new morality. And so we're just going to kind of morph that on into, because we've established that God is at the natural order. God is at the top of the chain of command, for lack of a better term. God is top chain of command. So we're just going to kind of morph right onto our Christian specific. Because, as I've pointed out already, the modern church has been one of the great promoters of this unnatural. And again, if it runs counter to the truth, it runs counter to the natural order of things, then it runs counter to God. Regardless of what words people mouth, people stand up there all day long and say, Jesus is Lord, Jesus is the Son of God, Jesus died for my sins, 3 days later was raised from the dead. That's all fine and dandy. But then when the next words out of their mouth are in conflict with or in opposition to what God has established in the natural order, that is anti-God. It is anti-Christ. It is an anti-Christian doctrine. The false morality is anti-Christ. It's anti-Christian because it runs and flies in the face of truth. It flies in the face of what God has established. These simple truths that we point out here, the show is so controversial. And I look at what we talk about on the show, and I don't think there's anything controversial at all, except we live in a society drowning in lies. So the truth itself has become, all this has become so controversial. I lost the word there for a minute. on too much of a roll. If you stood up in a random church, and I'm sure there's churches out there that, I'm not saying every single one, but by and large, you could just throw a dart. You had a list of your churches in your community, threw a dart, landed on one, walked up into that church, walked up to the pulpit. I walked up to the pulpit in this church that I've picked at random in your community and spoke these truths at the pulpit. It would be a hella scandal. People would be aghast. I can't believe you said that. You hate immigrants. You hate people of other countries, of other nationalities, and you hate women too. Get him out of here. Run him out on a rail. The Apostle Paul said he didn't suffer a woman to even speak in church. He must have been a woman hater. Never mind in the fact that in other letters that he wrote, he spoke highly of women that were of great help to him and to the other apostles. They were of great help. They were of great support. Please recognize him. He mentions some of them by name so that they get the recognition they deserve because they were of great help. He didn't go back on, I don't even suffer a woman to speak in church. We have to maintain the chain of command, the hierarchy. As he put, God, man, women, children. This is the natural chain of command. This is what makes things work. And yet, he would speak glowingly of certain women who were of great help to him, great support. We couldn't have done what we did without these women's help. He didn't tell them, hey, forsake your duty of forwarding the society. Don't go out there and have kids. In fact, rebel against your husband. That's not what he said. These women were of great help. They did this while also carrying out their duties, their natural place in the order, the natural order of the society. It's such a shame. The more you think about it, the role that the Christian church, as it were, has played, not in defending God's morality and what God has established, but in promoting this new reality. The church itself has been central. People sit there and say, oh, you're wasting your time talking about this Christian stuff. Nobody cares about it. The enemy cares about it. They wouldn't have subverted it if they didn't care about it. If this wasn't an important aspect of their plans to destroy your society, to impose this new order, this great reset, whatever you want to call it, then they wouldn't have bothered with it if Christianity was irrelevant. Christianity, what God has established, has worked as a bulwark against what Satan has wanted to impose on the world. And people are shocked that Satan's gone to the problem, or gone to the trouble, rather, of subverting the bulwark, the defense. It's like having a wall, you know, because back in the, you know, of course, now we have these modern weaponry, walls are pretty much irrelevant. But, I mean, you know, back in the day, you had a city, and then the city's primary defense was you built a wall around it. And that way, you know, invaders were always on foot, armed with things like bows and spears and things like that. And if you had a big enough wall around the city, it was a stronghold. I mean, they could lay siege to the city, but they couldn't necessarily just march on into the city because you had a big wall out there protecting it. And that has been the role of the church, to protect the society, to protect the people against the onslaught of Satan. And yet, the wall itself has attacked itself, so to speak, for lack of a better way. It's torn itself down. That which was supposed to defend the society and the people has forsaken that duty. They themselves have adopted the new morality. The morality to where if the truth might hurt somebody's feelings, you don't speak the truth. You see, because that's immoral under the new morality. Hurting people's feelings with things that are truthful, that runs counter. The new morality says you should never make people think of things that are unpleasant. You never correct somebody who perhaps is on the wrong path. You never do that because they won't like that. It'll cause them an unpleasant feeling. Never mind the fact that it'll set them on a path to, you know, do better and have a more happy life. That's irrelevant. You can't hurt their feelings right now. Forget looking to the eternal. You can't hurt anybody's feelings right now. Everything is about in the moment. Everything is about emotionalism. The church itself has abdicated its role of the truth of Christ, and has instead taken up the role of promoting the new morality, of feeling good. Nobody wants to go around and feel shitty all the time. Nobody wants to go around and feel, you know, I was in a melancholy mood last week and I didn't enjoy it. You know, I want to break out of that as soon as I possibly can. But the notion that everybody can go around and feel good all the time is a lie. We have trials, we have sufferings, we have things that come up in our lives, and this is what makes us grow. This is, again, how things work in this world, or how they're supposed to work. And yet the modern church has basically adopted the new morality that you should never say anything that makes people feel uncomfortable. You should never say anything, you know, whether it's truthful or not, that might make people not feel comfortable about the way they're living their lives, or what they're doing, or what they're signing up for, whatever. One of the things they've done to do this is to reinvent Jesus, who, when you read the account of, you know, the way Jesus conducted himself, you know, as an example for us, by the way, he was always being controversial. He was constantly being confrontational. He was constantly challenging the lies of the day and those perpetuating them. But Jesus was like, when he showed up in a town, I mean, he healed people and stuff. And then what was he doing to, you know, the healing, the miracles were to set the tone of authority. In other words, you know, you said, well, why did Jesus go around healing the sick? Well, one of the reasons for that is to establish his authority. Otherwise, you just have this random guy show up in town and say, no, you know, look, they've perverted God's laws. They've twisted this around. Your religious authorities are lying to you. This is what God wants. And they'd be like, who are you? Rando carpenter's son that shows up and suddenly acts as though he knows everything. What authority? By what authority do you do these things? He was asked this. By what authority do you do these things? Well, Jesus would do these miracles. He would show up and they'd be like, hey, you know, here's Joe Blow here that's been crippled his entire life. Everybody in the town knows him. He's never been able to walk. He drags his smelly ass around on an old rug because he can't walk. He has to drag himself around by his hands. And Jesus would be like, you're healed. The guy get up, roll his mat, and walk away. People couldn't deny that. Everybody knew this guy. It wasn't bringing in people from out of town that nobody knew and say, see this guy? We found him on the road. We bring him with the traveling show and we're going to heal him. That's not what he did. He would go into a town, find a guy, there'd be some guy there that everybody knew. You can't fake that. When it's somebody in the town, everybody knows this guy. They've known him since he was a little kid. He's always been a cripple. And he heals him. Now when he says, look, they're lying to you. They've subverted, they've twisted God's laws to be what they want them to be, to their own benefit. They are liars. All of a sudden, it isn't dismissible with, who are you, just a carpenter's son going around acting like you know everything. His authority established. He hired Joe. Yeah, when the religious authorities would come up and say, when the Pharisees would show up and say, how dare you say these things? You know, they're trying to defend themselves in front of the people. Jesus not backing down, being controversial, being confrontational, calls them out on their bullshit. And there's everybody, what authority? And the people are sitting there, dude. He just hired Joe. He just healed Joe over there, who we all know has been crippled his whole life. I think maybe he has some authority to say these things. It carried a purpose. But under the new morality, they've reinvented Jesus to, somebody said one time, and I've stolen the term, you know, hippie Jesus that just goes around talking about flowers and peace and love. They've reinvented Jesus into hippie pacifist Jesus that never is confrontational about anything, never says anything that hurts anybody's feels. In fact, never tells anybody that, you know, they shouldn't just do whatever it is they want. Which is, of course, the exact opposite. It's like this inverted notion of who he was. And who he is. Again, you're not more holy if you feel bad all the time. That's not what I'm saying. But you're also, it's not Christian to go around and tell everybody they should feel good all the time either. Satan always promises these things that, like, you know, this is going to make things, this is going to be great. You go back to the story, the illustration of Adam and Eve in the garden. You know, hey, you know, yeah, God told you this, you know, eating of this fruit. He might have told you that, you know, it would lead to destruction. But look, it's going to be great. It's going to be great. It's going to make you like him. That's why he doesn't want you to do it. And who did he approach? He approached the woman. What did Adam ultimately do? He gave up his role of authority and did whatever she wanted to make her happy, and he partook of it as well. He gave up his role of being an authority and being like, woman, what the hell have you done? And he said, okay, I'll eat the fruit too. You see, everything, it's always about twisting that natural hierarchy, that natural order that God establishes. Satan always wants you to get rid of that, but he doesn't do it in a way to where, like, you know, hey, this is going to lead to your destruction, because who would do it? He always presents it as, look, great things are going to be. Great things are going to happen. He's always trying to establish, impose his morality, his new morality. No matter how you look at it, the new morality always seems to boil down to do what feels good, do what seems right to you in the moment. Give no thought to the bigger picture. Give no thought to the future. Give no thought to how this might actually even affect future generations. Do what feels good in the moment. Kind of sounds familiar, doesn't it? Just eat the fruit. It'll be great. Don't worry about the future. God, you're not going to die. Yeah, God, no. He's just telling you that. Do what feels good in the moment. The new morality always seems to come down to abandon what God has established, abandon your role, your hierarchy, your role in society, your role in the family, your role on this earth. And do what feels good in the moment. Satan cares not if down the road you discover that it was a lie, because so often the damage has already been done. He is a destroyer. He is a murderer from the beginning. He is a liar. He's not going to feel bad that he ruined your life by having you spend years and years and years chasing after a lie. In fact, he thinks it's funny. He's laughing at you. You spend your life running around chasing a lie, chasing a lie, chasing a lie. And then all too late, you realize it was all a lie. He tricked you. doesn't care. He's a murderer, for goodness sakes. He doesn't care. He's not about being fair. Justice is the opposite of that. He doesn't care. He thinks it's funny you destroyed your life. You missed your opportunities. You missed your opportunities for happiness. He thinks it's great. That's his whole point. It's his way of striking at God through his people by ruining their lives, by making a mockery of them, by getting them to adopt his morality and abandoning that of the Lord's. We're going to wrap up on that note. Hey, look at the clock. We actually managed once again to fit it in within an hour's time, 2 weeks in a row. Something's going to happen. Big things are going to happen just because this show got done on time 2 weeks in a row. That's a sign. I don't know what's a sign of, but it's got to be some sort of sign. I really do appreciate you stopping by. I really do appreciate the fact that, you know, those of you come back time and again to listen. Anybody that's new tuning in, hopefully you got something out of it and you kind of get a taste for what we do with this show, that it is something unique. And like I said, this week we did it a little different. Normally I kind of stop at a spot and I make it a turning point. Here's where we go into the Christian specific message. And we do usually read from scripture, by the way, and talk about things such as that. But you know, this week, I really think this new morality topic was important enough, and it is all so interrelated, because you can't have a new morality without destroying the old morality. And the old morality is what God has established. It is the natural order. So the two were just so completely intertwined. So we did it a little bit differently this week. So again, hopefully you got something out of it. Once again, I do appreciate it. Throw a little in the offering plate. I don't require much. Actually, I do. If you've never supported the show, hope you'll consider doing so. Those of you who do, I really do appreciate it more than I can say. We're going to wrap up on that note. Don't forget, I'm on Fridays, the Daily Nationalist with Sven Longshanks. It's a little shorter show and usually a little lighter on the topics, sometimes not. But we do try to make it. We always try to end the week off on kind of a lighter note. So if you haven't caught that before, be sure and catch that. It's usually a lot of fun. So we're going to go ahead and back on out of here. And glad you stopped by, and hope you'll stop by again next week for the Church of the Lampshade Show.